You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Could you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong. When I turn right, but you turn all the way.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
With Dr. Dawn, I'm so glad you're here today. I'm glad I'm here today, and I'm glad we get to talk about one big feeling. Maybe the most important feeling there is in the whole wide world, and it's called love. You are so loved. You are so important to the people in your family, your friends, all of your teachers, all the people in your classes, your community, your neighborhood, whoever you are, wherever you are loved. You are loved. And because you're loved, you love others. You love your family. You love your friends. You love other people. And you're kind and generous and wonderful. There's a story in my culture that I will tell you today, and I think that you will love it, because I do, and it's a really good story. In the old ways and in the old paths, our people believed that the animals could talk, and they still can, but they could talk so that you could understand them, they could understand us, and they could understand each other. And so, when people came to be, they were small and cold and wet, and all of the animals thought they were pitiful. "You've seen these people," said the bear. "They are small, very small, because bears are big." "Yes," said elk, "who are all so big. These are very small people." "What do they call themselves?" asked the deer, who could run very fast. "Anayunwia," said the eagle, who was respected for his ability to fly so high and see so far and his sharp mind. Said the beaver. "They aren't doing very much work." Beavers are known for doing lots and lots of work. They build dams and they work hard and they do many things. I think they're kind of strange," said the raccoon. "They're just wandering around. They look pitiful. And they're sad." "Well, that's true," said the fish. "And they're cold and wet." "Fish are cold and wet too, but they don't mind." "They can't even fly," said the birds. "They don't know how. They just shuffle back and forth on their cold, wet legs." Oh. "This is really hard and sad." And the people were pitiful. I mean, they couldn't fly. They didn't know what to do. They were cold and wet. "And they're probably hungry," said the wolf, who was always hungry. "And they don't have any friends," said the rabbit, the trickster. "Well, I feel sorry for them," said the hawk, who was also greatly admired because of his keen mind and sharp eyes and ability to fly so high. "But something must be done. They are having a terrible time. I think we should help them," said the hawk. To this day, we appreciate the hawk for that. "But how?" "I will give them my nuts and seeds," said the mouse. "Well, that's very kind, but that's only a little bit of help," said the raccoon. "I will sing a beautiful song for them," and they will hear my voice in the morning and know it is time to get up, and when they hear it at night, they will know it is time to go to bed. That's what the songbird said. Well, it's not much, but it's honest work, said the beaver. I'll give them some help with doing things and building things. This is all very kind, said the elk, but I'm not so sure that that's enough help. They're hungry, they're cold, they're wet, said the wolf, and they don't seem to be very smart. They're having trouble figuring things out, that's for sure, said the salamander. And it looks so, as you can see, the animals wanted to help, but they didn't really know how. But there was one animal we don't talk about very much in the Southeast tribes, and we don't see them very much either, but we used to. The bison, Yanasi. They were a food staple for the tribes in the plains in the West, and we hear about them as part of that culture mostly. But in this day, so something must be done. Some help must be had. And we didn't always have the relationship with the bison that other tribes had, but we certainly do appreciate them for helping us. Because they come forward, the bison. And they say, we see how difficult this is. We see the sadness of the people. The real human beings are tired and scared and sad and cold and wet and hungry. We will give ourselves to them. They can use our hide to keep warm. We didn't live in teepees, but some tribes did. They can use our bones to make jewelry and weapons. They can eat bison meat, and it will be delicious and nourishing and healthy. They will live in good health and happiness because they have friends. The bison will be the friends of people. We will give them something to eat. We will keep them warm and dry. We will allow them to use every part of a bison to help themselves. And in return, they will honor and respect us. And that's true because we have dances about the bison. We have songs about the bison. And other tribes that depended on them even more have lots of art and culture related to them. This is good, said the eagle. This is good. This is very kind, said the hawk. This is the way it must be, said the bison. If people are going to be able to thrive and live in good health and happiness. All of the animals agreed. They were very sad, but happy that the bison had decided to have such a giveaway, to share and be generous and kind in such a good way. And so to this day, we have a bison dance. We decorate with bison, our weapons and our jewelry. And we do respect and honor the bison for helping people to be people, real human beings, generous, kind, and loving. It's an old story, and it's just a story. But it is the way that they told it to me, the elders, when I was your age. I wanted to share that story with you because I believe that love gives. Not to the point of hurting itself, but it does give. If I just tell you that I love you and I don't ever help you, if I'm not kind to you, if I don't share with you, then those are just words. They're just words. And so let's think about our love as the biggest and most important feeling there is. We love our friends. We love our family. We love our parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and sisters and brothers and siblings and cousins. We love our pets. We love. And love is a verb. My granddaddy used to say love has arms and legs. And so when we love people, then we say kind words to them. We help them when they need help. We are patient with them. We try to understand them. When we love people, we may hug them or kiss them, hold their hands if they're our parents or friends or family members. We may draw pictures for them or sing a song for them or do something nice and kind for them. When we love people, our lives get better. In my story, the bison shared everything they had with people so that people could be dry and fed and have some place to be. But in return, the bison are respected and honored by many tribes across North America. Who do you love? Who loves you? How do you show that love? What are some ways that you feel loved? When do you feel loved? My granddaddy used to say that people are all the time telling you they love you. Sometimes they even use words. And I think about that a lot because when we only use words, I love you, that's wonderful. Oh, it's wonderful to tell our friends and family we love them. We love you. But there's so many ways all the time that people are telling you that they love you. And you can show them that you love them. I'm thinking about how your parents, your grandparents, your caregivers show you that they love you. They make sure you have enough to eat. They are there for you. They listen to you. They do things with you. How your teachers, we all love you so much and we want the best for you. And so we are putting together these classes and thinking of things about you to help you and encourage you. Your friends can't wait to see you. They love to spend time with you and do things with you. There are a lot of ways we can say, I love you. We can use our words to say, I love you. We can use our time to say, I love you. Your parents may have worked hard all day, but still they have time to spend with you. We can use our talent to say, I love you. Drawing pictures, singing songs. Maybe you do a dance for someone or you share what you know how to do with them. Oh, gifts. We can make a gift for someone or give a gift to someone when someone gives a gift to us. That may be the way that they're telling us that they love us. I'm thinking also about help. Helping people is a way of showing that you love them. Giving is a way of showing that you love them. How can you show the people in your life right now that you love them? One thing that's really fun for me to do is think of ways to love people. To actually spend time thinking of, they would like this. Oh, wouldn't it be fun if we did that? I think it's wonderful. Because if we're all doing that for one another, then everybody feels loved at all times. Right? You're telling your friends you love them and they're saying that they love you. And now both of you feel loved. You make a nice picture for your parent and they work hard and help you to have the things that you need. Both of you feel loved. You give a hug and you can't give a hug without getting one back. You smile at someone and they smile back. Now both of you feel loved. Love is a very important feeling. It is the biggest feeling. And it is the feeling that has the most power in every situation. Love others. Love yourself. And you will have a great life. You will have a wonderful time. And you'll have a really good day. Oh, thanks for spending time with me for Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. I can't wait till I see you next time. It's Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. Oh, hello, my sweethearts. Oh, I love to spend time with you. You are so special to me. And you are so loved. You are just wonderful, 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 wonderful. You are so loved. You are so loved. I hope you know it. Oh, I hope you feel it today. I think one of the greatest things we can be is kind. Kind, yes. Kindness is something anyone can do. Everyone can do. Anyone can show kindness. Everyone can show kindness, no matter what. There may be things that people tell you you're too young to do or to know. Well, you're never too young to be kind. What's kindness mean to you? Kindness means to me that I choose to show love in every situation. I could argue, I could yell, I could keep everything for myself, I could eat it all myself, I could not let people play with my toys, or I could be kind. I would like to tell you a story from my culture that is about kindness and why kindness is so important. It's important to you, it's important to me, and I really want to remind you that when you're kind to people, when that becomes the way that you live your life, you'll be surprised at how kind people are to you. Yeah. I mean, if you make a mistake, if you spill something, if you do something you didn't want to do that was kind of cringe, and someone helps you clean it up, how do you feel? Right, a lot better than if you had an accident and then you had to clean it up and then you felt bad about it. How do you feel when maybe you don't know the answer to a question in class, but your teacher doesn't make you feel bad about it. Your friends don't tease you about it. Everyone just tries to help you. Maybe the teacher repeats it or teaches it a different way. Maybe your friends jump in and help you find the answer. How do you feel then? Yeah, you feel cared for. You feel like, wow, I can do this. Right? Kindness is very important. Kindness is extremely precious. Not everyone is athletic. Maybe not everybody can run fast or jump high. Maybe everyone can't sing or can't dance as well as everyone else. I don't know. But everybody, anybody, anywhere, anytime can be kind. I'll show you. Well, in the old paths, in our culture, and in the old ways, we did everything with stories. We told stories, and stories were how we learned lessons about how we should behave, how we should treat other people, what we should do and not do. We learned about nature and space and time. We learned how to do things like stories about basket weaving or beadwork, like I do. Or even how we should treat other people, how we should behave in our families, and what we should do. So stories were very important. And my great uncle, Jerry Wolf, a great man, beloved man of the Cherokees, taught me this story, and he told me to tell it. And so I'm going to tell it to you because it shows how important it is to be kind. How important it is to be kind. Well, in the old paths, the elders say, the animals could talk and we could understand them and they could understand us. And they still can talk and understand each other, but we don't always understand them. Now, at this time, the animals could talk in such a way that we could understand them. And so one day, the animals all decided in the forests and the hills and the mountains to have a great ball game. And the kind of ball that they played is called stickball. And stickball, you hold a stick and you run and you can throw the ball from the stick or catch the ball in the stick, but you can't use your hands. And people try to get the ball if it falls and try to throw it to their side and this side, and everyone runs. And sometimes it gets really rough. All of the pushing and shoving and trying to catch and throw. Stickball is very active. So the animals decided to have a great ball game. It was actually the eagle and the bear's idea. And they're both highly respected animals because the eagle can fly so high. And the bear, well, have you seen a bear? They're very smart and they're very big and they're very dangerous. We see them around here, but they're not cuddly. We don't get close. And so the animals all were very excited. The birds in the trees were chattering and waving their wings. The fish in the river could see the ball game because it's very important not to leave anyone out. So they could see from the river, and so could the turtles and the frogs and the toads. And they were so excited. Who would win the great ball game? And then the animals began to pick their teams. Who would be on Eagle's team and who would be on Bear's team? Well, of course, the big animals were chosen first. Big animals like the elk, who is so massive. We have elk in the road sometimes, and you just have to wait if you can't go around them. They have a mind of their own, and nobody can move them. The big animals were chosen first. And then the fast animals, like the deer, who run so fast when you see a flicker of their white tail, and then they're gone. They can jump over a fence. We have deer eat our pumpkins that we put out for harvest time for decoration. And sometimes they just jump the fence and they're gone. We have animals who are smart, like the fox, who can solve problems and is very, very clever. We couldn't figure out who was eating all the dog food for a while until we realized a fox was coming down the mountain at about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning and eating, helping itself. And the dogs didn't mind. They were friends. And the beaver, who is so smart, he's a natural architect. He can build things. He can make a dam out of wood and stop a river if he wants to. He has a lot of what we call strategy. That's problem solving. So there were other animals who try very hard, or clever, or are fast. Raccoons are incredibly clever with their little hands. They can open a jar or a door or a lock or a trash can. And possums, they can hang upside down. And there were other animals too that were chosen because they were winners. People thought they were the people who could win the great ball game. So the eagle and the bear had finished their teams, and everyone else was ready to sit near the ball field and clap their little hands and cheer and shout and wave their arms and watch the big game until everyone heard a very tiny voice. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me. Who said that? Said the wolf, who was fast and strong and one of the very first animals picked for a team.
I said, excuse me, said the little voice.
Who is that? Said the raccoon, who was very well known for being able to throw and to catch and to open and close with his little hands.
I said, excuse me, I would like to play in the great ball game.
How is that? Said the beaver.
I don't know, said the bear, but they seem very small.
Very small. I would like to play on a team in the great ball game, said the mouse, who was very small and not always very fast and certainly not very smart. And, well, or was he? Just by looking at someone, you can't tell who they are or how they are. But everyone looked at the little mouse and thought he was too small and too slow and too not smart to play in the great ball game. I'm sorry, said the eagle. We have all our teams. We have chosen the animals that we think are the best choices. The animals that could run fast, the animals that could jump high, the animals that are strong or smart. They're all on teams already, and we're ready to begin. The eagle wasn't mean about it. He wasn't rude about it. He just didn't listen to the mouse very well. I understand, said the mouse, but I would still like to play in the great ball game, please.
No, said the bear. Absolutely not. No. No.
Nope, said the wolf.
Nope. Nobody, nope.
And he kicked the mouse out of the way. How mean was that? Oh, the little mouse rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled down the ball field all the way to the other end. When he stopped rolling, he sat up and dusted himself off, and he said, "That's no way to treat a person. That is very mean." And it was. And the little mouse looked up, and there was the hawk standing there, very concerned. Hawks are very admired because they fly so high and they're so smart with keen eyes. But hawks can also be kind. "I'm sorry that happened to you," he said. "Wolf shouldn't have done that, and it was very mean. You're too small, and no one wants you to get hurt. But you can sit and watch the game from the sidelines with the fish and the birds and the moles and the chipmunks."
"Moles are blind," said the mouse.
"I know," said the hawk, "but they like to listen, and someone sitting next to them can share with them what's going on."
"No, thank you," said the mouse. "I want to play in the great ball game. It's a dream of mine."
"Oh," said the hawk. The eagle had walked up to them and looked very concerned. "Well," said the eagle, "if you stay out of the way and don't get underfoot, don't get trampled, you can stay at this end of the ball field,"
Right.
said the mouse.
Thank you.
The ball game began at the other end of the ball field. And the beaver was running, and the raccoon was running, and the elks were bellowing, and the wolf was running and howling, and the ball was going back and forth, and there were great clashes of people and animals and sticks. And the ball game was a good ball game. The birds were cheering, the fish were cheering, and at every moment the mouse ran back and forth. When the ball went left, he went left. When the ball went right, he went right. And when the ball went up, he jumped up, even though he was far away from the ball at the other end of the ball field. And then something happened. The ball began to roll. It rolled past the deer, and it rolled past the elk, and it rolled past the hawk, and it rolled past the falcon. It rolled toward the mouse at the other end of the ball field.
"Oh my,
"Oh my, oh my," said the mouse. But instead of running away from the ball that was coming towards him, which was much bigger and would probably smash him, the mouse ran toward that ball. "I'll get that ball," he said. "I'll get it. Don't worry." And he ran toward this ball, which was big, bigger than he was, and could crush him. And at that moment, the elders say, the creator noticed that mouse, and he felt proud of him. And the mouse reached out his little mouse arms to grab the ball, and all of a sudden, he began to fly. Creator, we say, in our culture, had given him wings. And the mouse flew to the ball and scooped it up and took it to the other end of the ball field, and he won the game. Oh, that kind of mouse still has those same wings to this day, the elders say. And that's why we call that mouse a bat. Our elders tell this story and teach it to us to remind us to never be unkind. Don't hurt anyone's feelings because they're small or because of the way they look or the color of their skin or what they know how to do or can't do. We should be kind to people, not unkind. So I know you're going to be kind, and I think people will be so very kind to you. Oh, I loved having heart to heart with you. I'm Dr. Dawn, and I can't wait until we spend time together again. Next time.
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcast for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage. Scroll down to Featured Podcast. Click on Play or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Hello, sweethearts. Oh, how wonderful to spend time with you for Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. Oh, I love spending time with you. You are a lovable person. You're a likable person, and I like you and I love you. And today I want you to love you. Right. I said you. I want you to love you. I want you to be your best friend. Yeah, you've got best friends and they're wonderful and you love them and they love you, but I want you to be your best friend too. I want you to be able to enjoy spending time with you, reading a book or playing a game or making or building something. You are a wonderful person, and I want you to love you. I do, and lots of other people do too. All of your teachers, your friends, your family, oh, your community, we love you, and you're very, very special to us. We like you too. Yeah, we do. You are unique and special and wonderful, and you are so loved. So to that end, I really want you to appreciate you, how wonderful you are, and how much you are loved. This book is called On the Day You Were Born, Deborah Fraser. And I want you to think about some ways in your life that you can celebrate you. We celebrate your birthday, but every day is a gift. You are a gift to us every day. You know, when you learn to love yourself and like yourself, it will help you make decisions, good decisions. See, if you like yourself, then there are certain people that you'll just leave alone. You don't have to be ugly or mean to them, but you will not spend time with people who act in certain ways or treat you in certain ways that don't line up with you loving yourself and being your own best friend. When you love yourself, you know what else happens? You love others more. When you're happy and content with yourself, then you can be kinder and more loving to other people. I'm thinking that love helps me make most of my decisions. Like if I have a path or a choice, sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes all the choices are good, but sometimes I have to use love like a compass. You know what a compass is? If you're reading a map and you look at a compass, it helps you know where the north or the south or the west or the east is. Well, love is my compass. That's the compass I use. I think with every decision I make, am I going toward love? Am I walking in love in this decision? Does this decision hurt someone else? Does it hurt me? Right? And if I use love as my map, my North Star, my compass, then I feel like I'm always walking in a good direction and I'll make better choices. If everyone is teasing someone else and making fun of them, would love do that? No, it would not. And so if you do that, if you join in hurting someone else's feelings, you're not walking in love. You're not walking towards love. You're not letting love be your compass, your directions, your GPS. So love is my North Star. It's my GPS. It's my compass. For other people, of course, but also now I'm learning to use it for myself as well. And that's what I want for you. I want you to be able to love yourself enough to walk away from people and situations that hurt your feelings. I want you to be able to love yourself enough to think, If I do this, if I say this, if I eat this, if I try this, if I go this to this, or if I am with these people, will I have more love in my life or less? Will I have more love for myself and respect for myself or less? Yeah. Isn't that awesome? It starts with you. Your love for yourself, your love for your friends, your family. And one of the things I have noticed about loving myself more, liking myself more, is how much I enjoy everything else more, right? When you love yourself and you like yourself, everything's a lot more fun. Everything is a lot more enjoyable. And so I want you to start out that way. I want you to be your own best friend. I want you to love other people, absolutely, but I also want you to love you. I want you to like you. You can make a list of things you like about yourself. We're not bragging. These are true things. It's not bragging if you can back it up. My uncle used to say that. And so if you put a list of things you like about yourself, oh, wow, don't you feel better already? Isn't it wonderful to look at the things we like about ourselves? And yeah, we'll do better later. And maybe there are some things we need to grow and change. But right now, just as you are lovable and you are loved. You are loved. Did you know that even some of the things that maybe you don't like about yourself, other people would love? Yeah, they would. There are some things that only you can do because you're the best you in the world. And you are important to all of us, and we need you, and we celebrate you. But I want you to celebrate yourself. See, I believe that humility comes before honor. And so humility isn't saying that there's nothing good about you, or, oh no, you're not that great. No, humility is knowing that there are wonderful, good things in you, and liking those things and loving those things, but knowing that those things are there to help other people. You are wonderful. You are talented. You are a great human being. And the reason why is so that you can encourage and uplift and help other people, including yourself. Yeah. You know, there are some things in this world that you are destined to do. There are some amazing people that you will meet. There are some great places that you will go. But most of all, you will always be fabulous, fantastic, terrific, amazing, stunning, radiant, elegant, great, good, special, unique, no matter what. That doesn't change. And I want you to be so rock solid in your foundation that even when you have a little trouble, maybe you struggle with math, or you have trouble with handwriting, or maybe you did something you wish you hadn't done, or maybe you got in trouble today, that doesn't change how unique and precious you are. You are loved because you are you. Not for what you do, not for what you wear, not for what you look like, or how well you play a sport, or how much skill you have in art or music. You are loved because you are you, and you are enough. And that's why I want you to like yourself, love yourself. We like you. We love you. But I want you to love yourself because that will bring you comfort. When you struggle with something that isn't as easy as some other things, right? That will not change your love for yourself and others. I want you to be solid in loving yourself and taking care of yourself, because there will be times that are hard times. And if you are really, really sure and certain that you are loved, that you are lovable, that you are loving, those times will be a lot easier. On the day you were born, Deborah Frazier. On the eve of your birth, word of your coming passed from animal to animal. The reindeer told the Arctic terns, who told the humpback whales, who told the Pacific salmon, who told the monarch butterflies, who told the green turtles, who told the European eel, who told the busy garden warblers, and the marvelous news migrated worldwide. While you waited in darkness, tiny knees curled to chin, the earth and her creatures with the sun and the moon all moved in their places, each ready to greet you the very first moment of the very first day you arrived. On the day you were born, the round planet Earth turned towards your morning sky, whirling past darkness, spinning the night into light. On the day you were born, gravity's strongest pull held you to the earth with a promise that you will never float away. While deep in space, the burning sun sent up towering flames, lighting your sky from dawn until dusk. On the day you were born, the quiet moon glowed and offered to bring a full bright face each month to your windowsill. While high above the North Pole, Polaris, the glittering North Star, stood still, shining silver light into your night sky. Oh, remember I said love is my North Star? There it is. On the day you were born, the moon pulled on the ocean below, and wave by wave, a rising tide washed the beaches clean for your footprints, while far out at sea, clouds swelled with water drops sailed to shore on a wind and rained you a welcome across Earth's green lands. Oh, my. On the day you were born, a forest of tall trees collected the sun's light in their leaves, where in silent mystery they made oxygen for you to breathe. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? That is just... While close to your skin and high as the sky, air rushed in and blew about, invisibly protecting you and all living things on Earth. Wow, that is incredible. On the day you were born, the Earth turned, the moon pulled, the sun flared, and then with a push, you slipped out of the dark quiet where suddenly you could hear a circle of people singing with voices familiar and clear. Welcome to the spinning world, the people sang as they washed your new tiny hands. Welcome to the green earth, the people sang as they wrapped your wet, slippery body. And as they held you close, they whispered into your open, curving ear, we're so glad you've come. Oh, that's how we all feel about you. And I want you to feel about yourself. We love you. You are so loved. You are lovable and good and kind and wonderful. And I want you to always know that on the day you were born and every day after, we are so glad you're here. Regardless of the day, we're glad you were born. And I want you to always be glad that you are you, that you are here, and that you are loved. Thank you so much for spending time with me at Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. I loved it. I love you. And I can't wait till we're together again next time. Oh, genius. Hello, gorgeous. I'm so glad we get to spend time together as part of Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. This is wonderful. I'm so glad to see you and spend time with you. I love doing that. I really do. And so I want to read to you today about heroes and role models. People that we can look up to and people who we can think about. Can you think of some people that you really like? And maybe in certain ways, you want to be like them. Uh-huh. Aw. Well, I sure can. You know, someone is always watching your life. They're always looking to see what you're doing and to learn from you. If you have younger siblings, brothers and sisters and siblings, they're probably looking up to you to find out how to do things. You can teach them things. You can help them do things. You can do things that they're not able to do for themselves, maybe. It's a wonderful thing to be a role model. To walk in such a way that other people can watch your life and learn from it, it's a good thing. And so, who can help us along our journey? Our parents, our grandparents, our great role models. We can pick things that we like about them and learn those things and look up to them for those things. Our faith leaders, our teachers, definitely. Oh my goodness, our teachers who help us every day to learn things. Community helpers. Many of our community helpers can be role models too. And I'm not saying that you should spend all of your time trying to be like someone else, because you are unique and special, just like you are. But my granddaddy used to say, in this world, there's two ways to learn. You can make mistakes or you can have mentors. And a mentor is someone who teaches you how to do something, who helps you to learn something. And because you learned it from them, you might not make so many mistakes as if you just tried to figure it out yourself. Like, think about this. What if you tried to teach yourself how to tie your shoes? You could come up with all kinds of ways to do it. But if someone teaches you how to tie your shoes, oh, now it's faster and it's easier because someone helped you. Think about the people who've helped you learn things. What did you like most about them? The people who helped me learn things, I'll tell you, I liked it when they were kind to me, when they didn't make me feel like should have known that already, or something was wrong because I couldn't do it the first time. Or the people who let me know that they would love me just as much, whether I ever learned to do this well or not. If I wasn't good at it, that wouldn't change how they felt about me. That wouldn't change their feelings about me. Those are the people I like to learn from. How about you? People who are patient, maybe? People who are understanding or compassionate and kind? People who spend time. I always like people who have time for me. You know, we're all so busy in this world. And when someone has time to sit and listen or to help you learn something, that's a great person to look up to. People who do the right thing, even when the right thing isn't happening to them, right? Sometimes it's really hard to do the right thing. And I always admire people who do, even when maybe the wrong thing would be easier or better for them, but they do the right thing anyway. Oh, I've got a role model to read about right now. And I'm going to read about this role model. And then I'm going to ask you to find some books or videos about some people that you can look up to. Inventors, maybe, or people who helped others. And spend some time learning about the lives of those people who try to make the world better for others. We can learn a lot from that. Wilma's Way Home. The Life of Wilma Mankiller by Doreen Rappaport and illustrated by Linda Cooker. My own story has meaning only as long as it is part of the overall story of my people. For above all else, I am a Cherokee woman. Wilma's Way Home, The Life of Wilma Mankiller. Wilma Mankiller is very important because she was the very first female chief of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. Full-time jobs for Cherokee people were scarce in rural Oklahoma. Wilma's family cut and peeled wood for railroad ties. They picked beans and grew strawberries. Wilma hauled water from the spring that her family drank from and used to cool fresh milk and butter. But no matter how hard they worked, they couldn't earn enough money for their family of 11. Few homes in rural Oklahoma had plumbing or electricity. Wilma's mother cooked on a wood-burning stove that also heated the house her father built. Like rural families everywhere who could not find work, the Mankillers raised vegetables and hunted and fished to put food on the table. It was a hard life. We were really poor. Dirt poor is how they say in Oklahoma. Wilma's mother, Irene, was of Dutch-Irish descent. Her parents disapproved of Charlie Mankiller because he was older and native. But Wilma's parents loved each other so much they got married anyway. Wilma's mother taught her the names of the trees and flowers. Wilma spent many days outdoors, especially when the dogwood trees were in bloom. My father must have known somehow that I would love flowers because the Cherokee name he gave me, Otsiluzgi, means flower. Wilma spent her nights reading books and playing Chinese checkers carved by her father. He was a great reader and storyteller and passed his love of both to his children. The warmth and love in our family made up for the lack of material things. Wilma's family was rich in love and in community. Cherokee people survived through Galugi, the philosophy of helping one another. Families who raised chickens swapped eggs for milk. People traded homegrown vegetables for store-bought goods. We are all interdependent. Do things for others rather than just for yourself. At get-togethers, the grown-ups talked and played cards. The children played hide-and-seek and kick the can. They caught fireflies and put them in jars and watched them flash on and off, then let them go. At the gatayo, the ceremonial stomp dance grounds, Wilma felt part of the ancient songs and dances. We've talked about community, people working together with the people around them, and it looks like that's exactly what they did. When Wilma was almost 11, the federal government created a new policy to relocate Indians from their land to cities, promising good jobs and better housing. Wilma's father did not want to move. He remembered all the times the federal government forced Native people off their homelands. In 1838, government soldiers forced Cherokee men and women and children to leave their homelands in the Carolinas and Georgia. They were marched 1,000 miles west in the freezing winter and sweltering summer, and many were hurt along the way. More than 4,000 Cherokees died on this forced removal west, which Wilma's father referred to all Cherokees as they were brought on the trail. Most history books refer to this tragic event, as the Trail of Tears. Wilma's father saw relocation as one more way to separate Indians from their people and to destroy their culture, but he was finding it impossible to get work in Oklahoma. Perhaps city life would give his children a better future. Wilma did not want to leave her home. I cried for days, not unlike the children who had stumbled down the Trail of Tears. Life in San Francisco, California shocked Wilma. No more fragrant dogwood blooms. No more flowering trees or hills or green valleys. Only buildings close together and some people sleeping in the streets. Instead of starlit skies and glaring neon lights, no more singing wrens, only blaring sirens and car horns. One day I was here, and the next day I was trying to deal with the mysteries of television, indoor plumbing, neon lights, and elevators. There were no better jobs and no better housing. The family missed their friends and relatives. At school, when the teacher called the roll, Wilma's classmates laughed at her name, and she wished that she could disappear. But her parents told her to be proud of her name. The name was given to the family because in the early days, they guarded village homes, and when enemies attacked, these warriors fought back. Wilma's classmates mocked her clothing and her Oklahoma accent. She tried to lose her accent, but couldn't. It was not that I was so much poorer than the others, but I was definitely from another culture. You see, Wilma? Seeking community, the family went to the Indian Center in San Francisco. Her father worked to open a free health clinic for natives. The family met other native people who also longed to return to their homelands. All agreed this federal policy was a disaster. It robbed us of our sense of place. Our vitality. Wilma hated city life, and she kept running away to her maternal grandmother, who lived on a farm 81 miles away. Finally, her parents sent her to live there. The hard work and fresh air were so good. The year on the farm was exactly what I needed. Wilma married at 18, and within 2 years, she was the mother of 2 girls. It was in the 60s, an era of protests. African Americans marched for equality, Latino farm workers went on strike for better wages, and young and old demonstrated against wars. Women met in groups to talk about their lives, and Native people protested the taking of tribal lands. I began to have dreams about more freedom and independence. Wilma started college, and she went back to the Indian Center and shared her life with other Natives. Her husband was not pleased with her new interest in friends. Hugo expected me to step completely away from the Indian Center and from my birth family. Starting in November of 1969, hundreds of indigenous people took over Alcatraz Island. And Wilma got a job at the Oakland Indian Center, working with children. When she needed support or money for projects, she turned to Native people, and they always helped. She took her daughters to visit tribal communities in California. They ate the traditional foods, they attended the traditional dances, and listened to traditional stories. The militants, the wise elders, the keepers of the medicine, the storytellers were my best teachers. These are her role models. I felt like a newborn whose eyes have just been opened to the first light. Her path ahead came clear. All right, you know what she did? She went back home to Oklahoma. She went back home to Oklahoma. And when she did, she attended the sacred ceremonies and built a home on her ancestral land. She made new friends and reached out to old ones and began to work for the Cherokee Nation government. When the chief, Ross Swimmer, saw how hard she worked, he gave her more responsibility and she went back to finish college. I felt whole again for the first time since my childhood, she said. And she began to work for the people. She began to help people get water and get community and the things that they needed. She brought water to communities that didn't have it. And then Chief Swimmer asked Wilma to run with him in the 1984 election. Before the Europeans came, Cherokee women and men always shared political power. But European ways influenced the Cherokee and limited the political role of women. And now some Cherokee believed that other people would laugh if a woman was elected. Wilma received hate mail. Her car tires were slashed. And at first, only a few people came to her rallies. Wilma visited people in the 7,000 square miles of the 14 counties of the Cherokee Nation. She answered their question. She told them what she believed in. Family and friends and Charlie Soap helped her campaign, and it was a tough race, but she won. In my household, no one ever said to me, "You can't do this because you're a woman or an Indian or you're poor." Of course, I would not have listened to them, even if they tried. And this is how Wilma Mankiller became the first female chief of the Cherokee Nation in the modern era. Most men on the tribal council did not support her, but Wilma forged ahead, creating programs to better the economic lives of her people. In 1985, Chief Swimmer left to work in Washington, and Wilma became principal chief. 2 years later, she ran on her own and became the first woman chief of the Cherokee Nation, the second largest Native nation in the United States. The third time she ran, she was reelected in a landslide. That means a lot of people voted for her. Prior to my election, young Cherokee girls would never have thought that they might grow up to be chief. During Wilma's 10 years of leadership, the Cherokee Nation revived a tribal high school, built 4 health clinics, 2 daycare centers, and a Job Corps training center. New businesses, a cattle and poultry ranch, gift shops, and a motel were created, bringing pride to her people, along with millions of dollars to better their lives. Wilma's work brought world attention to the Cherokee Nation and to Wilma, and pride to all Native people. Women can help turn the world right side up. We bring a more collaborative approach to government. Who do you look up to? Who do you want to learn from? Find out more about those people. Read about them. Watch videos about them and films about them. Talk with your family about them. Look for the people in your community helpers, your parents and grandparents and older siblings and teachers and classmates and friends who have qualities and things about them that you really like and admire. Let's be good role models, too. Let's be people who help other people, and people can trust us and look up to us. It's a great thing to be a role model. It's an honor to be a hero. And I think you're both. Thank you for joining me for Heart to Heart with Dr. Dawn. I had so much fun spending time with you today.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. What's the world?
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.